We're back.
We are.
And well coordinated as well.
In what way? The timing of the intro?
Yeah, I think we nailed it.
We nailed that. Oh, man. So, another week of this madness.
Yeah, another week. As I was saying, it's been a good week. I mentioned one reason, but maybe we should go into both.
What was the reason?
Okay. You need to find ways to interact with your friends, but not just stupid ways. Like, this is an opportunity to find out better ways to interact with the people you know.
Good.
And we've been doing that for a while, morning gatherings.
Yeah, we've been having a nice group of guys getting together. It's been unbelievable.
Yeah. We've been doing math lessons, and I started with my friends, a group of three friends. Each of us gets a class a week. We rotate, and we teach each other whatever we specialize in. And it's great because, like, either it's because we like it or it just naturally happens. You're surrounded by people with different skill sets. You're sort of an interdisciplinary group, but you really never step into each other's disciplines. And so, for example, the other day we had a creative writing lesson from a friend who's a creative writing major and likes writing a lot.
No way. I want a creative writing lesson.
Yeah, and we had a blast. And, like, you know, this person who connects with you thinks in a similar way, takes all of their, you know, classes that they took in school or that they studied online and condenses it into what they think is the most interesting and useful form. And then today I have a legal philosophy class.
Who's teaching that?
Albert Dweck.
Wow. Cool.
And it's exciting. And now you get the interaction with your friends, and you get it in a more productive way than I would have been doing otherwise.
Right. Why? Because in person, in person it's so easy just to look at the person and chill or something? Or because we get so much social interaction ordinarily that we're not starving for it? Like, why do you find that are you just leaning towards productivity and this was the direction your interactions were going to go regardless? Is it something specifically about now?
I think I was leaning in that direction, but it could have not happened for another year or 2 years or 3 years.
Right, we definitely expedited it. We've had conversations about this idea of the teaching each other secular subjects, and now,
yeah, and this just tore everything down, and so now
filling it with good things.
Yeah, like whatever's on your mind to fill it with is what you're going to fill it with.
Right, and I'm also noticing that my life has expeditedly moved in the directions that I was hoping it would. Yeah. I heard this idea that this thing just accelerated the way that things were going already. So we're moving more onto the internet. This was all happening and now it's just here. But even in our own personal growth, in a certain sense, it allowed us to become more us because we're less everybody else, maybe. Like, I'm noticing that we had a friend who made that video of himself playing music with himself, right? So I was thinking, he have to check it out. It's Pickett's. Check out his video. It's unbelievable. He's playing music, guitar, and he's playing six different levels of the guitar all combined. And it's like, whoa. And it's like the ultimate echo chamber in a certain sense that he's playing music with himself. Like, why play music with anyone else when you could play music with yourself? And I was thinking about it. This is not the first of that. Like, if you look at rap music, right? It's the rapper and the producer who plays eight instruments. It's not a band. And so, like, everyone's sitting at home and becoming more and more themselves, I think, you know, and maybe they're going on social and everyone posts a smile picture. But at the end of the day, when you sit home and you're not with everyone, you're confronted with who you really are. And whatever amount of your identity you took in the groups that you were a part of, a lot of that's falling apart. And the question of who am I becomes more and more loud and more relevant. And so if you had a strong sense of who you wanted to be and that was a very, very important thing to you, well, now you have the space for that to grow. And so you have a unique idea of learning with your friends, which no one else would have. And now that idea has been given the space to grow. And maybe for someone else who is attached to this group for a sense of identity is just experiencing the slow loss of that, and I would imagine going to see a growth of self.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good one. And at first, I was hearing like, oh, okay, there's going to be a growth of individualism, and I was concerned about it. You know, being part of a group is important for our identity. But I realized we're obviously still interacting with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And so having that return to self and that question of who am I and that process of discovery ultimately leads you to realize not that you don't belong to any group, but which groups do you want to belong to? That is part of who you are and that's your choice. And don't just get caught in life's grooves. You know, interact, like we're saying, interact with people in a positive way, structure your own life in a positive way.
And you could find more like-minded people easier. Like, we have this group of 10 people who we all lived in different areas. We had different schedules. Our schedules kind of homogenized a bit, which is nice. And we realized that we didn't need geography. And it only goes outwards from here, you would think. Like, I was thinking how I want to get voice lessons. I bet I could get that for $15 to $20 with someone anywhere in the country. Right, and that's just a chance. I pay him is just a little bit of a exchange for the interaction, but he's probably happy to meet someone passionate and energetic from this side of the world. And figuring out like how could we facilitate the forming of these groups that are aligned around interest and that are even broader and even further reaching.
Yeah, agreed. It's a huge question. How can we facilitate this finding of groups?
Like, I've been, so I'm listening to Alan Watts now on Audible. Really mind-boggling. He's unbelievable. I'm in the middle of a lecture, and he's hitting on every thought that I had, or, you know, he's putting into words thoughts exactly that I had. So it's this unbelievable experience. So first of all, I'm listening to it. I'm not the first person. You go on YouTube, there's millions of views on this video. So already we've been brought together. But we don't feel like we've been brought together. You watched a video that a million people watched, and maybe you interact in the comment section, which is okay. But we have this big group of people that like Alan Watts, but where are they? How do I find them? And it's become so shocking to me how much live matters that I want to go live. You know, like there's this thing, oh, live. You know, I don't know, but some live is a weakness. Like, wouldn't you rather just listen to Alan Watts than come listen to Morris Kish talk about something live? You know, what do I have to say? Go listen to him. He's, you know, but there's also the live and the community element of it that I think needs to be layered on top, where you go to this Alan Watts lecture on YouTube and you meet friends, because that was the whole point of going, and you see who's, you know, so I don't know if I'm rambling or what, but
yeah, that's a great point. And it's so interesting because we watch these people or read these people, you know, famous thinkers, and a lot of people have read them, and yet we go about our everyday lives interacting with people, and we don't even mention these things because you assume that nobody you interact with has read or listened to Alan Watts. And so, like, you're interacting in business or in a social scene or whatever, you're not going to bring up Alan Watts or Sam Harris or whatever.
Right. Well, I think it has to do with, and I would like to see this done, even though I have fear about what it would do. But everyone needs to have social media accounts that are true, that are in their name, that are linked. Your Instagram, your YouTube, your Facebook, where you could interact with, you could see what your friends are watching, basically, and see what your friends are liking, and where you have this understanding of who's where. Now, the problem is you get a lot of posturing when that happens, and it goes from being this honest pursuit to
a marketing campaign.
Yeah, and that's why no one, like, I've been getting angry about this. I don't know if I should talk about this on the air, but, like, I post things on social, right? I post a flyer to a class. 20 people come to the class, right? I can't get anyone to click like, though. They're more likely to actually come than to, I don't know if it's that they don't realize to press like, or when you press like, it shows up and other people could see what you like. Like, I'm not sure what the psychology is there.
Other people see that you liked it. I mean, Instagram specifically, it's so easy to like, right? You just double tap on the picture. Almost when you first start using it, it happens accidentally, like you're trying to zoom in. Like, it's not hard to like. It's that people know that when they like it, now other people are going to see, oh, so-and-so liked this class. And, like, this isn't something we're used to speaking about in public. And so I don't want to broadcast that I'm into Alan Watts or Morris Kishk's class. I want to broadcast that I'm at the beach drinking a beer.
Is that what it is? And then, but then smiles for Poppy, you know, if it's affiliated with a wealthy person, you know, then I don't know, this could be controversial.
Not necessarily wealthy, even just like something that's...
Once it becomes a trend.
Something that's light. I think something that's light is considered acceptable.
Now, everyone's been posting Yom Ha'atzma'ut now, so it became a thing. You could post pictures of yourself in Israel. Everyone's like, oh, great, we're allowed to post now. Pictures of me in Israel, post them. And then they post that. Oh, you're allowed to make pita for Yom Ha'atzma'ut. Post yourself making pita. And then as long as you stay within the ridges of the post, they give likes and you're good. But if it's outside of the ridges of the typical post, then no, no good.
Yeah, because by liking you, they're guilty by association.
Guilty by association.
Like you're not allowed to post that stuff.
Yeah, I don't understand it. Oh, man.
Taboo.
Okay, I didn't even say anything. It was a class. You came to the class.
Yeah, and you probably think it's you think it's a good thing to go to the class.
Yeah, right? What's the problem with that? I don't understand it. Oh, my God. But so you'd run into this kind of issue very quickly, right, with the Alan Watts thing. And but I want to – but like I said, you have this experience of watching it, and you're watching it alone. And the live shows you the audience, which is nice. You get to be in that session, and you see, ooh, there's an audience here. And that's the whole thing, because otherwise you could watch it on Netflix. And how do we build more of this community? Like even if you're watching something on Netflix, right? How could, there's people watching it at the same time as you. How could they give you that experience of feeling that? Because that's the experience that you want. And then the ability to interact and make friends with those people.
Yeah.
And not a chat. The chat is not sufficient.
No. I think a big problem is that the big groups are not so effective. Right? Like you go to the Alan Watts subreddit. It's probably overwhelming. I mean, haven't been there. I don't even know if it exists. I assume it does, and it has a decent amount of subscribers.
Also, it's all writing there. Who wants to write?
Yeah. But if it was voice, you can't listen to thousands of people's voice posts. And so I think we need a way to facilitate these groups, and then sort of like Zoom's breakout rooms, then just like, boom, put you in a group of three or four people. And then no one's scared to share. Second of all, there aren't too many people sharing, and you could just connect with whoever those people are. And I think we've seen that in our morning gathering. Like, a lot of us didn't know each other going in, and like you sort of just, we feel like we know each other, and it's only been, you know, whatever, we spend some time Zoom FaceTiming online, but it's because it's a small enough group that we're able to speak to each other. And when the group's larger, you get smaller breakout rooms where you could speak with each other.
But we still have this, like, so the WhatsApp blows up with videos to watch and this and that and the other. And no one really could take the time to watch it and engage in the stuff properly because there's just so much to watch and engage with. Yeah. And, like, that's been a frustration for me. You know, like, people are posting things I would want to take part, but everyone has all this chamber that they're involved in that they want you to look at. And, like, it's almost like, okay, I'll look at it for you, but... But, you know, and then we don't have the chance to come together and discuss it. I don't know. It's just a whole thing. Like, even now we're struggling, I guess, is the point, to be on the same page. And we have to take time out and say, we'll sit together for these 30 minutes. And that's the time where we come together. And then to make the rest of the time moments of coming together, even when you're not live. Like, how could we do that, I guess?
Yeah. Yeah. And so far we've been having to do it manually, which is so difficult, right? Consuming content together, I had to reach out to a specific friend and say, let's watch this show, you know, one episode a week and discuss it. But like you're saying, there are tons of people watching this show.
Right.
And probably a lot of people I know watching the show. One problem I can see right away is that we're consuming it on different timelines. And so you could discuss the whole show as a totality afterwards, maybe. But there's sort of an immediacy, like you want to discuss, no one watches the whole show and then wants to discuss the first episode.
No. All right. So it's like the podcast, and the podcast is good when you do binge mode, but I feel like people want even more. They want it to be happening with them at the moment.
And they should have a part of the conversation.
Right. It has to be a conversation. Yeah. How could you converse with someone that's not synchronous with you?
Yeah. That's a, you don't even want to converse with the current them. You want to converse with the them that existed 2 weeks ago.
Right, because I wanted to talk to someone about East of Eden. If you're listening to this, you know who it is. He wants to reread and catch up on the book. Now it's 2 weeks out on me. I have to go back and catch up on the book. And like, I wanted him in 2 weeks to talk with me 2 weeks ago, or me last week to talk to him 3 years ago when he read it the first time. And yeah, we're just struggling with that, I think. And it's exciting because there's so much upside here. Like, you see, we're going to get to a point where we're going to be able to be learning from the same people. I also think that's odd. Like, what role does you wanting to hear it from Morris Kishkinot, Alan Watts, or whoever you're, you know, no one wants to hear it from me, but whoever they want to hear it from and not Alan Watts, right? Like, what role does that play? I'm literally considering copying down the Alan Watts script and just giving the speech myself at my next fellowship, because it's, I would play with the words, but like, he's not the first person to say it either. You know, yeah. This is all we're doing. All we're doing is taking old information, reshaping it a little bit, customizing it, and then giving it again.
Yeah. And that's important because people need to hear it in the way they need to hear it. And that's really, like you said, Alan Watts was reshaping the ideas, but he's revolutionary. And part of what he did was he's a wordsmith. He's amazing with words.
I love it. He's a philosophical entertainer. That's great.
And you watch him live and you hear the audience giggling and you listen to him live.
It's unbelievable. I've been reading Kerouac. You try to search anything online. I want sentence by sentence. Where is the chat? I want to click on a sentence and hear the Rashi, Tosafot. I guess that's really, by the way, maybe this is a good place to step back. Where have we been able to have a conversation that's transcended time?
Yeah. Okay. Torah Shabbat Peh. Great.
Only with the Torah, in a certain sense.
But the conversation still there wasn't even happening live. What happened was their heroes came along and either had the whole conversation themselves or compiled the conversation. And so, like, you look at the Mishnah, someone compiled, like, that conversation wasn't happening. A hero compiled it. And then you look at even Tosafot. They're not all one person's teachings.
It's the viewer who turns it into a conversation. The viewer who reads Chumash, reads Rashi, reads Tosafot, reads Ibn Ezra, and understands even though the conversation isn't happening at the same time, they accept premises, and then they agree to read it as a conversation.
Yeah, and I guess that's where they transcend time in a way. And they're in all those conversations and part of those conversations. And then, like, another hero, Rashi, he broke down every line on his own. And so now anyone else can look at Rashi, and that's already a basis for a conversation.
Right, I need that on Kerouac line by line. Like, I read the line, and I'm like, that's a strange line. Is there any Rashi on this?
Yeah.
What do they say about this line? Like, I flat out wonder that. Like, what is this line? Is this?
Yeah. And so what it needs is a hero to go search the internet for everything they say about that line, read all of Kerouac, and then if you don't find anything on the internet, you have to come up with your own explanation. And
I also,
too much work.
And I also, what I think is, that's why you engage in the Torah conversation. Because you can't, if you want to create frameworks for it, you know, go knock yourself out, fine, which is a big challenge. You could try to do it. But we have a place that's designed to allow for all of our conversations simultaneously, and it's designed to transcend time. And if you make a contribution to it, then it will be discussed, and your voice will be preserved in the future. You can make it to science also. That's a similar arena, but
only because people are heroes, though. Like, I think we need those heroes, at least from our mindset, because the people are doing it in science and literature and arts and history. We need to try to be heroes in those fields and not just be a regular consumer. If you go to the Bet Midrash and study Gemara all day, you're not contributing. Until you, if you
are,
get to
though,
a level.
Okay. There's the hero who gets to the
level. You're contributing to society. You're not contributing to the conversation.
No, and you're also, you are, because you are the inspiration for someone to be a hero. Because he knows that in 30 years, there will be someone like you who will engage in his reading with that serious lens, and it gives him the inspiration to converse with. Like, if I could all of a sudden realize that if I have a conversation here, then in 100 years they could still converse with me, then that's what invites the heroism, allegiance of the students.
Sometimes, yes. Some of the heroes, though, no. Like, I think Rashi is a great example. I don't know that he knew his works would become so popular. He wrote them before the printing press, maybe.
Right, but he knew. No, of course he didn't understand the extent of it, but he knew the homage that he paid to his predecessors.
Yeah.
And the way that he was so indebted and in conversation with them, and it was the only thing that he could do is continue the conversation.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. They definitely play some role. But I think if we had more heroes, which are really creators.
But there's so many heroes. That's the problem. There's thousands of books, right? Thousands of creators. I'm reading this book, Prime Ministers, about Israel. I realize I don't even scratch the surface of knowledge about anything.
Yeah.
You know, there's been guys that wrote the books already. They wrote the books. They need the people to the guy who's going to learn Gemara to read the books is what they need, because
they have those, though. They're not as many, maybe, but you know, everyone in that space who you know, every academic or researcher or intellectual in that space reads the books.
Right. The books will be more read when another hero comes and finds a way to make it available to everyone. Is that what you're saying? The hero who compiles, who...
You need a series of heroes, right? You need the breakdown of the idea, and then the ideas get condensed. Like, if you look at the Torah, there are so many series of heroes until it reached our generation. And we're not reading all of the heroes. In a way, we're sort of just... taking the distillation of it. And like you look at a scientific paper, right? I think that, you know, that's, if it's a good one, created by a hero. But the masses are not meant to read the paper.
No.
But someone who then trickles down to the masses reads the paper.
The creators are all being exploited, meanwhile, by YouTube and by Instagram. I feel exploited almost. I would consider being a creator. There's no money in being a creator. At least on these platforms. And then these platforms have become tyrannical. I've been so upset with Instagram because, okay, I love the idea of having a channel that links to all these different things. But you have Instagram who won't let links out. They keep everything in they make you hide the link in the bio. You can't even find it, you know? Can't go to anything. You have WhatsApp now. It doesn't let you click the YouTube video. I want the guy to click it and to go to his YouTube account so it goes into his feed. So when he gets back there... But they won't let. You have the YouTube algorithm that insists on pushing garbage if it will retain the audience better than other things that will do less good of a job retaining the audience. So I could watch a video. Listen, YouTube, you're off because I watch him every time. I want his video. And somehow you bury it. I have to go search for it.
Because in the short term, it's not effective. The algorithm is just... short term, what's most effective. And it's, if you could get him to click on even one of these bullshit videos, he's going to click on another one.
It's a disaster.
So it's almost like, and people
have been slaving. Yeah.
People theorize that not only are the algorithms trying to serve what they think will click us, get most clicks, but they're trying to manipulate us. They're trying to change us to be people that will give them more clicks. And so you see that like in the political landscape, in the election, the Trump election, Trump-Hillary. People are saying like that the algorithms were intentionally polarizing people, because once you're polarized, they easily know how to categorize you. They could, oh, now you're in a far right camp. I know exactly what to do to keep you hooked.
And just for the audience, the algorithm is not a person. It doesn't know anything about this strategy. You can't attribute these motives. It has one motive. It's an evolutionary motive, survival, right? But it could discover that changing you, it leads to future viewership.
Yeah. I mean, it's likely that might be built in somewhat. It's possible that it developed on its own. They're sort of black boxes, the artificial intelligence to some degree. So we don't really know how it was shaped and what it did on its own. But yeah, it's a complex system. It doesn't have conscious
motives. Might not have bad motives. Yeah, it might not have conscious motives, except for it's capitalist.
Yeah.
It's capitalist. So
and ads are like that too, on the simplest level, right? Like advertisements used to just be broadcasting, like make you aware of this product that you might like. And now advertising is change your brain to want to make you like this product.
So I've been realizing this with leadership also, right? Think about what kind of leader you want to be. So I personally would want to be a leader who invites everyone to think more deeply and have thoughts and questions. but it doesn't make for a good disciple in the long run. And you can imagine that there were certain leaders who realized that the best kind of students were the ones who didn't ask any questions and who had utter allegiance towards their leadership. And you realize that the leader then changed the person to make him easier to hang on to. And that's a pretty scary thing also, because they're probably not in the best interest of the person. So the algorithm's doing the same thing, that it wants to keep the viewer. And what could it do to keep the viewer?
Yeah. Yeah. So do you think as a leader, it depends. Are you losing the value that you're providing to followers by leading in that manner, by leading in a manipulative way?
Right. So we've talked about this a lot. You'd think so, because the real thing is to get them to question on their own. That's the real thing, is to teach them that they're the rabbi. That's like what I think you ultimately need to do. And to trust them that they can be, or I would think, or maybe I don't know anything about the sheep, you know, in a certain sense, but, or their sheep, I don't know anything about it. Maybe they do have the best motives for their sheep, and they realize that, you realize though that there is times, like I'm noticing that now, right? So in America, we have all this freedom. And it's a beautiful thing. We love the freedom. But right now, the freedom is really going to hurt us, because if the government could be strong, a real parent, and say, you could only go outside if you're between 20 and 40 and you're not living with anyone above 40. Okay, and they could enforce that. Beautiful. Those people could go outside, slowly get sick. Now, then they could slowly figure out the calculations. If you're above between 50 and 60 and you want to take a risk exposure, we're now going to allow you to be exposed and we have a hospital bed ready for you. Let's test it. If you go, you go. There's freedom, but this is the way that you have to test it. Test it. You know, and they can make the calculations and they could publish the statistics and they could have that conversation with their children. Problem is, one, the children are so wayward with freedom that they have no faith in any of the institutions, in any science. And there's the parents are babbling. The media is making noise about every small detail. Yeah. There's no way that anyone could decipher anything from anything else. And at the end of the day, the parent doesn't have the authority to do what's best for the children. And we can't even trust the parent to do what's best for the children.
Yeah, all of those problems. And lastly, the parents are not even parents. They're also children. I have a great tweet from Eric Weinstein that I found this morning.
Okay.
Sam Harris retweeted it, and he once in a while posts things like that, but it's just the point. And I'm gonna skip the first sentence, but it doesn't change the context. Get an actual adult to explain where we are with an actual plan without lying to gain our compliance given the loss of freedom demanded, consequences to food insecurity, and risks of damage to the planet via conflict. That end is a little crazy, but his point is that
you need an adult.
Get an adult in the room. And he had a follow-up tweet, which is saying there are no adults in Washington.
None. Yeah, exactly. It's not a partisan thing. I'm not making a claim. We don't have a situation where there's a good parent. And that's, I think, the argument for dictatorship has always been, that when you have a good dictator, a magnanimous and loving dictator, it's the best ruler. And when you don't, then it's the worst ruler, you know, when you have a selfish one. But what we have now is good most of the time, and right now is probably not good, because we can't even come up with a plan. Everyone wants the vote, so you created a system where the leader doesn't have the authority. Trump has to worry about the next election from his perspective. Yeah. And so that's what you trained him to do. He's a capitalist.
Not only trained him to do, that's what he was selected for.
Right, he's selected by nature for his winning the first election. To win elections. Yeah. It's a problem. And so, you know, we have all the freedom, I guess, is the point. And that's like the rabbi who gives the people, think for yourself, go for it, think for yourself. Yeah. And now you have this situation where you can't, there's no one leader, there's no parent in the room to do what's good for everyone and to just put his foot down and say, this is what's good, this is how we're going to do it, this is the plan, here is exactly what you need to know to make your decisions. We're going to give you freedom. We're going to let you just, you want to risk it? You're 80 years old. You'll have the day when you could do it. Everyone on their schedule. That way, you know, you don't hurt anyone, but we have no way to do
any of that. Yeah. But
everyone's going to have to stay home. And also same, I keep saying, take the kids, put them in sleepaway camp with people that have antibodies. it's a worthwhile risk at this point. Keeping the kids at home over the summer is going to be destructive.
Yeah. Put the kids in boarding school. Get them away from their parents.
Exactly.
Man. Get them away from their parents. Exactly. Priority number one.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know. Parents are probably doing a great job also, but give the option. If a parent wants them to go, let them go, because, you know, the kid sitting at home, he's going crazy. They could get sick, the kids. Very few of them are going to get hurt, and they could have a normal life and have a fun. This could be another year or two of this where you can't send everyone back to school. School's the last thing you could do, because then everyone gets sick. And we never, like I try to keep explaining, 20% of the people in New York got sick. So we're not at the point where we're ready. If you send everyone back out, then boom, right back. So you're going to send kids to school, best case, with gloves and masks on for another year until we get to a vaccine. You know, where we don't need to do that if we had an ability to quickly pivot. But again, camps have no, they're going to get sued. So they can't do what's right. You know, no one could try to do what's right. In the school, same thing.
I can't take the masks. How is it reasonable that I go living the rest of for the next year wearing a mask every time I step outside? And it's so frustrating because it's not the solution, right? If we knew who is clean and who is not clean, maybe good testing, maybe separate contained environments like sleepaway camp or boarding school.
Right, then, we could start opening houses. Like, we should just take out a house, all young people, put everyone in the house, and whatever, everyone in that house could go out.
Yeah. I mean, if the virus comes into the house, the whole house needs to be quarantined for a period of time. And then everyone could go out. And if you have a whole campus of people who are low risk.
Yeah, and the colleges aren't doing it, right? And they're the first people who should do it.
Because the professors are high risk.
So don't put the professor in the room or put him in a mask in the back through a cage.
And no one trusts college kids. So they don't want college kids going to parties, spreading the virus, and then going out to town, going to bars.
Right, because we can't be strict enough.
Yeah.
Where we say, if you do that, you go to jail.
But if we said, if you want to go to Princeton, you need to stay in the walls and build a wall around the university. Then that should be fine. And just, you're given fair warning when you want to enter and when you want to leave. And like, if you really need to enter or leave.
No, once you leave, you can't come back.
Yeah.
That's all. Once you leave, you can't come back.
And you need to be tested and go into 3-day quarantine while we get the results of your test or something.
Right. Before you can leave.
And you can't get infected in those days.
There's ways to do it. We need more authority than the government has. And I guess we're just paying that price. So there's the freedom that you want the constituents to have, the people to have, the ability to think for themselves. But then you come into the situation where you realize they can't think for themselves. That's the other problem. People can't be trusted to think through everything, and you try to say it to them and they can't hear it properly. Unless you had a strong parent in the room, sat down with them and laid it out, but they don't trust. That's also the thing. No trust.
Yeah.
There's no trust in the relationship.
And part of that is, again, our system, right? If whether there's a trustworthy Democrat or a trustworthy Republican, the other side is going to rail into him until half the country thinks he's not trustworthy. And so that's a huge, huge failure of the system.
Yeah.
I also don't see the conflict with freedom. Like, I think your solution gives people their freedoms. It's just saying we're going to give you your freedoms in a contained way so that everyone is okay. But it's not China saying, this is how it is, and you have no choice.
No, but if you're over a certain age or you're living with a person and you leave your house, no, because they want to say, let's say we found that antibodies are actually legit, right? Which they don't want to say that at all, because then the second they say that, all the young people are going to go outside try to get sick. Like, let's say it's the case that once you get the antibodies, you're good for a year. So then the young people really should just expose them right away, and they're not ready to do that. And so now they don't even want to say that. But let's say they did, right? Then what's going to happen? They send you a badge to your house or a scanning key that you've been antibodied, right? Now people are going to try to find a way to scheme it, because still my personal interest, my business is going down. I need to get out. I don't care about spreading the disease to other people.
You're low risk.
I'm low risk.
You do care. You don't want to spread it, but it's like a tertiary concern.
I have no choice. My family can't eat. There's other costs that you're not accounting for my family, let's say, right? So now you have to have really dictatorial. You do that, you go to jail. You know, this is a legit system. You can't break the law, you know? They made these idiotic laws about speeding in the car where they send tickets to take money from you, you know? And instead of, like, when we say something and it's a law, it's a legit law. Or they made tax codes that are designed to cheat. So everyone becomes cheats, you know, because you're used to cheating the government. Now they're giving them PPP money and it's just like, all right, we'll go grab the money. They don't know what's going on. And they can't even, they give you a 100-page document. Who could read the document? unemployment. I don't know. They said self-employed people could get unemployment. I don't know what even if I'm lying or not. So you, right? So you have all these crazy things where people are being trained to lie, being trained to cheat, don't take the government seriously because they don't communicate effectively. And now when you need to be able to enforce things, you can't.
Yeah, and don't take them seriously because they don't seem to have our best interests at heart. And maybe if they communicated better, we would know that they really do, or we would know that they really don't, which is why I think they don't communicate effectively, because they don't.
Right, they hide it in 100-page legislation so that they could give money to people.
1,000-page legislation plus. Massive, bigger than any textbook you've ever looked at, with legal jargon.
Right. But all this complaining aside, I was speaking to someone, and he was just saying how he loves our troops and our politicians and everything. He's saying at the end of the day, we get to sit here and live this way. you won the lotto. You won the lotto. There's people living on the front lines, fighting the wars, being politicians who are not as rich as us, who are slaving day in, day out, to fight battles where their family can't eat. We have to go donate things to them. And this is our lot in life. You know, this is the
We definitely got a good lot. We definitely got a good lot in life. But it's just human nature to see how things can be better, especially when they're so far from it.
Yeah, I mean, we just want things to be better, I think. But, you know, the fact that it's being handled, and that our security is handled, and that our streets are handled, and whatever, you know, all that's handled, and we don't have to think about that, and we could think about this, and we could think about learning with our friends, and we could think about, oh, I'm upset at Instagram, but it still is tremendous, you know, I don't. You know, I see how all of these things could be better, and I want to help improve them. And I think when we have these conversations, they're designed ultimately to push to the next great democracy and the next great project. And ultimately, that's their goal. But I guess also to have the appreciation for the institutions and the country, and getting the politicking done. It's just not something that we found a system for that works. That's just the bottom line. The other option is a dictator. And if he's good, great. And if he's bad, you're screwed.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that could be, it could be good. I wish we had a powerful, you know, like we're missing that, like the Messiah, right? A powerful, you know.
Enlightened and just looking for good. Yeah.
Exactly.
But it's a fairy tale.
It's a fairy tale. The only one is God. You know, like if you want that, then you need to look up, and you need to imagine him, and you need to create the code. And I guess that's the thing, that we have that opportunity. You want to have that parent, then you are responsible for his construction.
Yeah.
You are responsible for cultivating that relationship with this parent.
And that really means that you are the parent.
Yeah, it's a version of you. It's the Salem Elohim.
And that's really what the message is, I think. You want the parent, become the parent. You think the world needs such a force? Step up.
Right. Be that parent in your family. Be that with your friends.
Even to yourself.
Be that to yourself. And have the relationship with that version of you, with this perfection that you could conceive of, that it seems like, you know, that you want to be at the helm. And then he will be at the helm.
Yeah.
If everyone appointed him, then he would be.
Yeah. And every time you get lost, you could turn back to the master that you created. And that's like, I guess, what would Jesus do?
Right. But you see people that constructed false gods, that wanted them to sacrifice their babies, or that wanted these crazy things. And so you have to be able to say, look, there's a flaw in their construction. I could construct a false god, the god of money. I could construct him. I could, the god of evolution, where it's just a dog-eat-dog world, and that's what I worship. And you could construct that. And then you could also construct a different kind of god. And I guess ours is a specific kind of god that you just know exists, however he got there in your psyche, that you know could exist. And so if you choose to worship him.
Yeah. It's funny because the god of power also exists in our psyche. The god of money, the god of survival at all costs exists in our psyche. And yet, so does this other god. I think that's the god we highlight. The one, the God that is operating on a tribal level as opposed to an individual level. That's right, stepping into the realm of where you're caring about a larger existence than just yourself.
Right. Right, because on the individual level, there is the other God exists on an individual level also, but he's not as you don't see his might as much as when you consider the implications on a greater group. If you just looked at your individual, you might say the God of survival, he might be the best God because he's going to get me the riches he promised. And but on a group level, that would utterly fail if everyone worshiped that one. And the other God would be far better. But even, I think I would argue on an individual level, that God, that Father, is really the Father that you need.
Yeah, for sure. And it's the God that's going to bring you more happiness and joy and beauty. But I think we're wired that way. I think we're wired to find more happiness, joy, and beauty from the God that cares for the tribe as a tribal survival mechanism.
Because we are the tribe. We really are a tribe. We're a group that got here together. We didn't get here alone. You could think of any story you want about how you got here alone. That's what I was saying about us having this opportunity. You know, so we're noticing parts of ourselves that we don't like, which is our politicians and the social media, which are greedy and self-serving. But it's a thing that we're noticing in ourselves that we're afraid of. It's a manifestation of us that we are greedy and we could be self-serving and we could it's a product of us, these things, these governments and these institutions, and they're products of us. They are pieces of us. I guess when you notice it in the outside, then you notice it in yourself and you realize, well, how should I act then if I don't want to be that, if I don't want to be the American politician? And how much am I trapped being that? Because this is the system that we're in. And if you want to vote, you want to be president, you got to get the votes. He doesn't have a choice.
Yeah. Yeah, beautiful. We're going to continuously try to get out of the trap, no matter how futile it seems, how big the trap is. But we also, I think, and you were touching on that before, we need to realize that we're also grateful for things as they are. Those two can be simultaneously true, right? We're grateful for what is, but we have a vision for what could be.
Right. Yeah. And we realize that we are all of that is bad in the universe and all that is good in the universe simultaneously. And a lot of the good is a product of the bad, or it couldn't exist without the bad. You couldn't have a country without defense. You couldn't have power, you couldn't have the power to do good without the power to do bad, or whatever way we could more poetically lay this out. But it's quite a burden, I guess. It really, it's a crazy plight we find ourselves in. And with the liberty to ponder these things and the lineage that encourages us to do that, I think also is a blessing and a challenge for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the greatest gift, and many times we've identified that as like the underlying theme of our tradition, that it's continuing to be part of the conversation. Don't step out of the conversation. That's the ultimate sin.
Right, the Rasha Mahu Amed, Ma'udazot Lachem. Right. Why does he take himself out of the conversation? You have to realize that anything that you could find is in the conversation, and any bad that you're seeing that would make you want to step out of the conversation is bad that you're seeing in yourself.
Not even that. It's okay to see the bad. Just you're still part of the conversation. The Chacham also says, what are you guys doing? Right.
Right. It's the same
words. But he says Adonai Eloheinu. He says, He includes himself in the conversation while still being skeptical. So
right, the Rasha is even a destructive force is part of the conversation. There's the revolt, the rebellion, the thing that tears down. There are people that tear down, but they, if they picture themselves from within, as opposed to picture themselves from without, then that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
All right. I think this is a tight 45 minutes. Should we just leave it at that?
Yeah, I think it's good. I mean, it feels longer than 45 minutes. We covered a lot.
Yeah, we span the globe. So just let's recap for the audience who made it this far.
And for ourselves.
And for ourselves, so that we could really take the wisdom and ingrain it into our being and have it affect our actions. Because as we originally called this podcast, the I Am Podcast, we're very, very aware that this could just be, you know, ambitory. Okay. We started with the growing of the individual.
Yeah.
The individual's in his own house.
The opportunity for the individual.
The opportunity for the growth of the individual, for you to realize who you are, who you're not, and for everything to be stripped away. Then we realized that there are things that you could now join where you become a collective again, but more along the lines that you want a productive conversation instead of a inane conversation, choosing the conversation that you be a part of. We spoke about some of the limitations of technology in facilitating that conversation and our dreams of basically the Torah's ability, Torah Shabbat Peh's ability to have this conversation out of place, out of time, eternal conversation, brought to a wider array of topics. We'd like to see it.
And brought to us in real time.
Brought to us in real time.
Yeah. That's sort of what we want, which is maybe the impossible.
It's deep. Well, only the... only things that deserve to be eternal are treated that way. If you read a modern book, it either is regurgitating a classic, or it's not going to have line-by-line analysis.
Yeah.
But I get upset that even a classic doesn't seem to come with line-by-line analysis.
Yeah. And it's also just hard to find.
Exactly. I'm reading Kerouac. It's a classic. I searched. There's a couple of articles. Where are the articles? Where's the conversation? I'm ready to jump in. Show me, where's the convo? Yeah. No convo exists. There's the YouTube video. Go watch Alan Watts. A million other people watched it. Yeah. Where's the convo? Yeah. I don't see the convo. I can write a couple of words.
Look in the comments. Yeah.
Takes Alan Watts. What an incredible man. You know? Yeah. Where's the convo?
And even stupider stuff than that. Just smoked bowl.
Yeah, exactly. this launched me off.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so we want that convo to grow, and we want to be able to be a part of the conversation. And we're realizing everyone wants to be live because they want to be a part of the conversation, figuring out ways to grow the conversation at scale, but also in smaller groups. We spoke about the limitation of our government in this time and the need for a strong father-like figure who would guide us in leadership. And we realize we don't have it, and historically there hasn't really been a recipe to get it. Except for to appoint the one within you and to really find the father of the world and find the one who is true, merciful, loving, and to connect with him every day. Find him outside of yourself and find him within yourself. And through that relationship with the best part of you, with the Salem inside of you, with the God that's best for the tribe, recognizing that you're a part of the tribe, then you'll have that, and you'll understand how to act, and you'll understand that the leadership was there all along, and it was you.
Yeah.
And then arrived here.
And then we arrived here, roughly.
Roughly, in some order. So, we hope you enjoyed this ride. We hope to continue to bring you more things in more forms. And we hope you're enjoying this. Thanks for joining us for another episode of
Cold Plunge.